Some Democratic members of Congress have called for invoking the 25th Amendment to remove President Trump from office. The calls came after an exchange became public between the president and Norway's prime minister. But what would removing the president from office this way entail? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss all this is Northern Kentucky University Chase College of Law professor John Bickers, and University of Cincinnati Professor of Political Science, David Niven. Welcome back, John and David.
Always a pleasure.
John, the 25th Amendment is being discussed as a way to remove the president from office, but it's more than that. Can you briefly explain what it's all about?
Oh, the 25th is a magical amendment. I think it's a great moment of pride for us as Americans because we had centuries worth of problems that had mounted up since the convention regarding the vice president and the vice presidential duties and successions to that. And in the 1960s, we decided collectively that it was too dangerous in a Cold War world to continue with this. And Congress sat down and did hard work that really redounded to the political advantage of no one in particular, and came up with an amendment that does four things. First, it establishes that if the president dies, is removed, or resigns, the vice president actually becomes the president, which actually the original Constitution does not say. And second, it allows for a new vice president to be selected with a majority vote in both houses of Congress based on a nomination of the president to replace a vice president if you needed to do that. Because up until the 1960s, we'd had over 35 years of our history where we had no vice president because either the vice president had passed away or the president had. The third part allows the president to voluntarily, temporarily cede duties to the vice president if he or she is going to be incapacitated temporarily. President Reagan did that when he had a cancer operation. President George W. Bush did it a couple of times. President Joe Biden did it once, where they said, I'm going under general anesthesia for some procedure. You take over vice president, and then I'll resume the office afterwards. But the one that we've never used and the one that is the most contentious, and it was the most contentious in the 1960s, is the fourth section, which says that if the president is temporarily incapacitated, he or she can be essentially removed from their duties. They're not removed from the position, but the duties go to the vice president as a temporary matter. And that takes a decision by the vice president and a majority of the cabinet. So that's, I think, what we're talking about regarding the recent discussions.
Yes, we sure are. So, David, this came up most recently after a text message became public that President Trump sent to Norway's prime minister. Can you explain that exchange a little bit?
Well, basically, we're in a moment where Trump is obsessed with the Nobel Peace Prize. He's frequently talked about the many, many awards he's received. You know, he likes to proclaim he was Man of the Year in various awards that no one's quite sure actually exist. But in this case, he comes out and says, if I don't get the Peace Prize, then I'm going to punish you. And it comes across as a bit unhinged. And, you know, to be clear, to date, in the 60 or so years that the 25th Amendment has existed, the most serious discussion of it was in the aftermath of January 6th. And it referred to, Trump. And this is really the second most pressing discussion of that provision, the presidential removal.
Well, and we should note, too, that there was talk about this after former President Biden's terrible debate performance against former President Trump in the presidential campaign. So there was some talk of it then, too, wasn't there, David?
Well, yes. And again, the key language of the 25th Amendment is unable to discharge the powers and duties of the office. So it's not limited to physical health or mental health. It's any form, you know, in which the vice president and either the cabinet or a body that the Congress designates determine that the president is unable to discharge the duty. So the meaning of those words is in literally in the hands of the vice president and either the cabinet or any other body the Congress wishes to formulate to evaluate this.
John, those do seem like very ambiguous terms. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot of firm definition in this amendment about what it means for a president to be unable to serve or demonstrate an inability to serve. Is that on purpose that the terms are that broad?
It was on purpose. We've had a couple of occasions in our history, some we knew about at the time when President Garfield was shot. He lingered for more than 2 months, almost 3 months before passing away. And people didn't want Chester Arthur to take over the duties of the president because then there was a question, if Garfield recovered, would he get the job back? We only later learned that the last year and a half of Woodrow Wilson's presidency, he was largely disabled after a stroke. And President Eisenhower had some very bad periods after a heart attack and a stroke. And so the Congress was trying to figure out what could be done if a president was physically disabled. Everyone would grasp and agree on that. And if we imagine a president being comatose after a shooting, for example, as President Garfield went in and out of consciousness for months, then it's easier to decide. And mental instability was also a concern. And there were so many different proposals in 1963 and 64 that Congress decided to draft an amendment that would essentially leave the question open to the future. And that's why the amendment is phrased, as David noted, in a way that leaves it bifurcated. The vice president is unavoidable. The vice president has to make the decision to invoke the 25th Amendment's Article 4, Section 4. And then either, as noted, with a majority of the cabinet or this other body, but Congress has never passed a law that created another body. That was something that some of the people wanted in the draft, so they stuck with that. But at this point in time, because it's inconceivable that Congress could pass something that would get the president's signature, we're talking about the cabinet.
Well, we're talking about the 25th Amendment and what the Constitution says about how it can be used to remove a president from his duties. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. David, I want to get back to this most recent reason that this is coming up in the context of President Trump. There was this text exchange. Apparently, what I've read about it is that President Trump responded to a text he'd gotten from the Norwegian Prime Minister and said, because you didn't give me the Nobel Peace Prize, I don't feel inclined to think only of peace. And then he talked about, how he wants to annex Greenland and mm-hmm. all that. He did tell reporters afterwards that he doesn't care what the Norwegian government says. He believes they control who gets the Nobel Peace Prize. Are there any other things about President Trump, his actions, his behavior, or his perceived health that are leading to these calls?
Well, you know, as we're saying, the 25th Amendment is open with respect to what is the nature of the inability to function as president. So breaking the law could be grounds for invoking the 25th Amendment. You know, an unhinged exchange with a world leader could be, you know, reason for it. The behaviors, you know, with respect to the boat strikes and the Venezuelan activity, any of these things, you know, could be considered outside the bounds of the Constitution, outside the bounds of, you know, propriety and you know, acceptable presidential behavior. But as John said, this amendment was very much written to give decisive say to the vice president. If the vice president says there's no problem, then under the 25th Amendment, there's no problem. There's no other path. It begins with the vice president. And so, you know, I think a very good argument could be made that the sole quality upon which, you know, J.D. Vance distinguished himself as a potential running mate was that he would never invoke the 25th Amendment. That's almost what he was, you know, selected for the job for, or quite possibly it's exactly what he was selected for the job for.
Hmm. David, did some of these, you mentioned the question of the 25th Amendment being raised after the attack on the Capitol on January 26, 2021. But it seems to me that there were some concerns that came up even before that, with people raising concerns about President Trump's, you know, mental and physical health during his first term. How problematic can it be, though, to raise questions like that just from observations and, you know, what you see on TV or hear on the radio?
Well, again, you know, there's a conventional wisdom and a conventional understanding of our law and constitution that are pretty easy to invoke. But I think, you know, the bottom line here is to be very, very clear. We have an impeachment process and we have the 25th Amendment. Those are your two routes to removing a president. And in effect, the 25th Amendment standard is even harder than impeachment. You could remove a president through impeachment on a majority of the House and two-thirds of the Senate. To remove, actually, you know, take away the president's powers here for the long term, it would require the vice president, a majority of either the cabinet or a congressionally created panel, and then two-thirds of both the House and the Senate would have to affirm the removal if the president contested it. So a contested process for the 25th removal is actually harder than impeachment. And the premise really of its, you know, of its writers was this should be a situation where we all see the president is in some way incapacitated, you know, and you know, John mentioned Woodrow Wilson's stroke. If the 25th Amendment had existed at that time and congressional leaders were aware that he couldn't function as president, that would be the kind of situation that might prompt congressional consensus.
So, John, it sounds like the point was really to remove politics from the equation here.
Correct. And in one way, the framers of this amendment really saw the future, because for most of U.S. history, the vice president hasn't exactly been an ally of the president. They often were chosen from another wing of the party by the party, and they often had no relationship at all. In the past 30 to 40 years, we've really begun to think of the White House as a partnership, and the vice president is, as David notes, not going to do this unless it is beyond discussion. And we could certainly imagine a situation with, it can happen to people of any age, but our last two presidents have been the oldest two people to occupy the office. And that is going to lead to worries. And if a president should succumb to a mental or physical ailment that makes it impossible to do the job, there's a way of gently shifting them out of power without the indignity of removing them from the presidency that impeachment would be. But it really would have to be something like that. I think policy disagreements, even pretty extreme ones, are never going to get there.
You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about the 25th Amendment and what the Constitution says about how it can be used to remove a president from his or her duties. My guests are University of Cincinnati political science professor David Niven and Northern Kentucky University Chase College of Law professor of law John Bickers. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk at WVXU.com. peacepriceinstitute.org. We did get an email from Steve in Oakley. He's got an extensive email here, but this is the part I'm going to read. He says his observation is the removal of a president can be challenged by the president being removed, throwing the issue to Congress. With the current resident of the White House and a two-thirds majority needed, it seems doubtful this could succeed, even with the strong possibility of a midterm shift in the composition of both houses. John, that brings me to you. I mean, it's as I understand it, if this process is started, the president under this amendment could get his or her power back by declaring to Congress that no inability exists. Is that correct?
That is correct. The authors of the amendment created a system whereby the vice president and the majority of the cabinet write a letter to the president pro tem of the Senate and the speaker of the House and say, the president is disabled, I'm assuming these duties, and we're done, unless the president sends a note to them saying, hey, I'm actually fine, in which case Congress has 21 days to decide who is the president. And as David was noting, and as Steve noted in the note, it takes two-thirds of each chamber, so it's a very high bar. We really are imagining a situation in which someone is well beyond normal human decision-making. This is sort of the, for those of us who are advancing in age and have had parents advance in age, this is the take the keys away from the car moment. And that's what we're talking about. Hmm.
So, David, what do you make of the politics of this situation? It seems, I mean, highly unlikely, really impossible that a majority of President Trump's cabinet would agree to remove him from office or that Vice President J.D. Vance would initiate that, doesn't it?
It does. And in this exact situation, again, this was a cast of characters assembled with the 25th Amendment in mind. This was a cast of characters assembled to never invoke the 25th. But a realistic case could be made that in the first term and around January 6th, for example, that Vice President Pence at least considered, even though he ultimately did not want to pursue this, at least considered the 25th Amendment. And several members of the cabinet at that moment said it should be invoked. So this isn't impossible. And even though it might sound unworkable in this exact moment, it isn't impossible. And to be fair to the 25th Amendment, John mentioned this a little bit earlier, it's done some remarkable good for the country. We were without a vice president for about 20% of the years before the 25th Amendment was passed, because the vice president had become president and there was no process to replace themselves, or the vice president died, or once Vice President Calhoun just resigned the office. So it's been a triumph in that regard. It's been a triumph when presidents have invoked it on themselves and given the powers of the office away, generally for just a few hours at a time for medical procedures. And it's been a triumph in being very, very clear that should a vice president succeed to the office, that they are the president. They're not acting president or interim president or almost president. They're the president of the United States. So those are real triumphs. You know, being able to specify that process has saved a lot of headaches, especially in a modern politics where everything is fought over.
Well, and John, you mentioned that this came into existence during the Cold War and all the uncertainty that came with that. But it was also right after the assassination of President Kennedy. I mean, and it was used pretty quickly thereafter by President Nixon, right? So this got used almost right away.
It was. And one of the things you see members of Congress talking about is President Kennedy, when he was shot, died the way that President Lincoln had, very quickly. But if he had died the way President Garfield had and lingered for months with periods of consciousness and periods of unconsciousness, everyone of every political stripe thought that was dangerous for the nation. And looking back then and discovering that, well, President Eisenhower had some substantial periods where he was essentially unable to fulfill the duties of his office. And we have to do something. And they did something. They left some holes. They left themselves a little wiggle room so that if a future Congress and president wanted to create a disability board, they could. None have. That doesn't surprise me. And it never addresses vice presidential incompetence, which is an issue as well. But when you're writing a constitution or even a constitutional amendment, you cannot solve all problems for the future. You have to assume the future will figure it out.
David, with as tough a bar as this is, why do you think it keeps coming up? We talked about this. This came up during President Trump's first term. It came up during President Biden's term. It's coming up again. Why do people keep talking about the 25th Amendment when it's so difficult to actually use it to remove a president from their duties?
Well, I think the main answer here is we're not used to presidents behaving in ways that are incomprehensible or unprecedented or both. And so it naturally puts our attention to, well, what do you do if the president is going outside the boundaries of the Constitution, or the president is going outside the boundaries of, you know, sort of what would it generally be considered to be rational thought? It naturally puts the mind to the 25th Amendment. And, you know, again, to say that the math of it doesn't work out right now is certainly true, but it's not the same thing as saying that it doesn't matter that it's there and that there is a standard and a process awaiting.
John, you know, you talked about how for many, many years, this country didn't have this clear line of succession that the 25th Amendment provides. Do you think the founders purposefully made it difficult to remove an elected president from their duties during their term?
The original founders didn't address it at all. They said that if the president died, resigned, or was unable to perform the duties of the office, they would go to the vice president. And John Dickinson asked at the time, who decides and what kind of disability is this? And there's no record of anyone responding. In a sort of a, we're writing a constitution for hopefully hundreds of years in 3 months. We just don't have time to answer all the questions. When we had the first president die in office, William Henry Harrison, his vice president, John Tyler, was by some people referred to as Vice President Tyler, who had just assumed the office. And he said, oh, no, I am President Tyler. And we sort of accepted that. So there's a sense in which the Constitution offers us pieces, building blocks, and what we as a people do with them and what we accept is the open question. When David was talking about this coming up during President Trump's first term, this was not true when the discussion happened during President Biden's term, but toward the end of President Trump's first term, there were a number of people who were serving as acting cabinet secretaries. They hadn't been confirmed by the Senate. And there was a discussion among lawyers and law professors, at least, about whether they would get a vote or not. And the answer I always thought was, if the vice president counts them in the vote, then they got a vote. And if he doesn't, then they didn't. And we'll see if the American people accept it. That's not an issue now. Everyone has been confirmed by the Senate. But I think the notion in 1965, as the notion in 1787, was we just can't account for everything. And if we imagine a president getting severe Alzheimer's, for example, and being unable to talk, you get severe aphasia, you can't speak, what do we as a nation do? And the sense is if the vice president and cabinet want to do this, they should have the authority to do that.
Well, I've been talking with Northern Kentucky University Chase College of Law Professor of Law John Bickers and University of Cincinnati Professor of Political Science David Niven. Thank you both so much for your time today. Up next, why local communities are using flock cameras and the concerns of privacy advocates. This is Cincinnati Edition.